Welcome to Polycast,
the official podcast of Pulp and Civilization site. I am Imran Siddiqui with Dan Hugh. Say hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
All right. Unfortunately, we have lost the rest of our crew. They're up cavorting somewhere. I believe Lucutus is out at the Dutch Poly Meet, actually meeting Poly members. This is unheard of. Well, not unheard of, but... And Mackie is... well, we're not sure where Mackie is. Hopefully she turns up.
Well, maybe she is Sid's mistress. Oh, no, wait.
Oh.
Doesn't that just get your mind turning?
Well, perhaps. It only turns a little bit. I'm sorry. No wonder we couldn't get people to fill in here. They were all trying to get updates with Matthew. Maybe she accepted one.
I guess so.
Hey folks, Makalua here. You'll hear from Lucutus and myself in the latter half of this week's show. First up over in the news, we'll hear about Transition 2006, Dale winning the EG Mod single player category, and the Lord of the Mods interview. For the Modcast, we've got discussion on the place of railroad connections in Civ, followed by our show's first Senate segment, where Dan and Imran address the debate over universal suffrage versus the representation civics, and whether the diplomacy victory is the toughest way to win in Civ 4. In the mailbag, we're going to hear about the failed initiative to have a Poulton and Civ fanatics deleted from Wikipedia and how inactive usernames are dealt with in a Poulton. In our new feeders segment, Dan, Imran, and myself contribute to complete a reading of Jeremy 2.0's Myron vs. the Volcano. Finally, we'll all get a break from Imran and Dan, especially Dan, when you hear the second part of our interview with Civ 3 co-lead designer and Civ 4 lead designer Soren Johnson on Civilization Chronicles, which was conducted by myself and Lucutus a while back. Oh, and just in case you were still wondering, I am not Sid's mistress. Or Dis's either. No matter what kind of clever spelling tricks Dan tries to pull. Bad Dan. No biscuit. No shiny things either. ACS co-founder Daniel Dan Q. Quick is now controlling owner and administrator, with existing staff members Walter Locutus Schneiders, Ming, and Ra as part owners and administrators. Marcos Giannopoulos, who founded and for more than 8 years co-owned and administered ACS along with Quick, is remaining on staff as technical director.
And Dan, why don't you go ahead and explain to everyone, if they haven't already heard, which, you know, who knows, they may be like, transition? I don't care about no transition. Why don't you explain what in God's name is going on?
Yes, well, with regards to Transition 2006, announced on November 24th, what is happening is while Marcos is remaining on staff, he is no longer co-owner and administrator of Apolton with me, simply due to time restraints on his part, and we want Apolton to continue to grow as it has grown for more than 8 years now, but this change has been necessitated, so he'll be remaining on staff in a technical capacity. I am now controlling owner and administrator.
Oh,
fear.
No.
Fear the banning rod.
You must have had some bad blackmail pictures of Mark. That's what I think. His whole, he doesn't have time anymore. But now we have some more administrators too, right?
Yes, maybe that's why Locutus actually isn't here. He's not at the poly meet. He's trying to help keep the server online. Check it a little harder, Router. A little harder. And with him is our favorite moderatorship duo, Ming and Ra.
Oh, no. We're doomed.
Yes, you are.
Doomed for a while, anyway. Well, it seems to be a new time in Apollon's ownership. I don't presume they'll be all that much different. Well, except that we can take shots at Mark now more easily. Ha ha! Stripped of your administrator tag. Ha ha! Grease is going down.
What Imran doesn't remember, folks, is that Marco still has banning capabilities.
Oh, crap. but I now have the staff immunity, right, Dan? You weren't lying to me about that, were you?
immunity? What? Is this Survivor now? What?
I won the immunity fair and square.
Yeah, so we kicked Wouter and Mackie off.
Mackie thought she was in alliance with me.
Oh. And, you know, the feedback that's been out so far, it's just been, still less than 24 hours as of this recording that it was announced. The feedback has been very positive, and we appreciate that. As announced, it's been going on since mid-September, so Imran and Mackie, I guess you guys have known for, what about, as staff members, we're privileged to the information before about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks?
Yep. All right. Privileged information.
You managed to keep your keyboards silent on it. See, as opposed to your mouth shut, see?
Yes.
Okay. Don't log back into your account. I have to check your private messages now. You've got me concerned. You better have used email.
Don't click on the one that says Dan is dreamy.
If you send it, I won't look at it anyway. No.
No, I think that was from Comrade Tassadar, actually.
Oh, we found a new executive structure that's going to work. And as I said, we found people to put in the position that have been with Upholden for a long time now. They're caring, trustworthy, dedicated individuals. Not to say that nobody else is. Don't worry, Imran. You're at least one of those.
They're willing to use blackmailable information against Dan for the right price.
If we weren't able to find these people to fill this position, then at best the new executive structure would have been a neutral, because they just didn't want to fill it with anybody.
Except for Dan. Me, I have everything.
Well, the devil you know, right? Along with that, I mean, Marcos and I have been working on this. It's been a partnership for more than 8 years. I've been a webmaster in the Civ community for more than a decade.
Mm.
It's a big change. Regardless of how logical the next step is, it's still a change. So it's going to take some getting used to. The front page has been redesigned to emphasize, amongst other things, Polycast. Obviously, that it exists, at least. It exists in our minds, right, Imran?
Wait, it doesn't exist? Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. As well as links to Age of Nations, and as we also put the links to our hosted sites back on the front page since they had been bumped off. Not intentionally, trust me, but they have been intentionally put back. Did that sound convincing? I was playing it over in my mind.
Play it over again, Dan. I hope everything goes well. I don't assume there'll be all that much difference that we can perceive at first. We'll probably miss Marcos, I assume. Pepper all of your kiss-ups to Ming, Ra, and Locutus now. Divert them from Marcos.
As a part of the eGames and Electronic Expo that was held in Melbourne, Australia, the weekend of November 17 to 19, a modding competition had been organized that included Civ 4 as an eligible game. The winners were announced in the EGE blog, and Upholden veteran Dale was named the best single-player mod, one of the four categories in the competition. Dale's winning mod, Age of Discovery, is set in the time of Columbus and explores the founding of the New World.
So I guess they did include Civ 4, because remember last time we were a little curious as to whether they did or not, because they said they did. Dale said they did, but their website didn't say it.
They just want to shock us and surprise us. Congrats to Age of Discovery. I mean, you know, we had them on our interviews, and look what happens. See? If you come on Polycast, good things happen to you. It's good karma is what it is.
We knew him before he was famous. Don't forget the little people.
Wait, who's Dale? Well, it's good. It's good that Civ is getting a lot of good play here, and also this award shows how the modding capabilities of Civ 4 and how you could really take the game to another level by using the Python system and all that SDK stuff and fun stuff. Not that I would personally know, just that I know of it.
Same here.
yay. Now, if I'm looking at the website here, I guess we can't, I mean, maybe you remember about the other mods that were up there. I know they showed the runner-up, which was an Unreal Tournament 2004 mod. So, I mean, there were some, I guess, you know, the pretty big mods that Dale was up against, and a good job to Dale for showing them how it's done Civ 4 style. Speaking of which, Unreal Tournament won like every other thing. If you noticed, Dan, they
indeed
won Best Multiplayer Mod. They were runner-up for Best Multiplayer Mod. They won for Best Level. They won for runner-up for Best Level. Best Weapon, runner-up for Best Weapon. Special mention, and another special mention. Now, it wasn't the same people, but it was a bunch of different people, but it was all Unreal Tournament with the right smack in the middle, Best Single-Player Mod, Age of Discovery, Civ 4, Dale Kent. Apparently, Australia is stuck in Unreal 2004 love.
Wow.
Just like Korea with StarCraft. It's kind of interesting, but good job for Dale for cracking the Unreal Tournament barrier there. He did beat out an Unreal Tournament mutator, so good on ya.
And what was Dale's award for getting this honor? He had to put together a video presentation. My
goodness. So he has to do more work?
Exactly. No good deed. No, just kidding. You can download that 5-minute video that Dale uploaded from our directory at apolt.net/dir. So again, congratulations, and when the next one comes around, we hope that you'll put in another entry and perhaps inspire some other Australians out there, Australian civvers, to...
We just want Australian civvers to be inspired by this. The rest of you, what's wrong with you all? Dale can win an award.
Tolkien fan site The Chamber of Wreckers has posted an interview with MRTN, the head henchman of Civilization III modding team for Lord of the Mods, a mod set in the world of Lord of the Rings series of books by J.R.R. Tolkien. The interview discusses the mentioned Total Conversion mod for Civ 3 that has been under development for 2 years, which provides all new graphics for the game and is set entirely in the Tolkien universe, with 15 Civs ranging from Rohan to the Shire to Mordor, and around 30 new units and 25 Great Wonders that stretch from the Age of the Sun to the end of the Third Age.
As I mentioned before, I don't have Civ 3 installed on my machine anymore, but, you know, kudos to these guys for the dedication to see this through. I mean, from what I have seen and read, it looks impressive.
Yeah, have you seen the screenshots from the link they have? These graphics are actually very well done. You know, they look very good. And, you know, I mean, that is a highly impressive mod, the Civ 3. You know, unfortunately it is Civ 3, and I don't have that on my computer anymore, but, I mean, they've really done a good job here. I mean, they've really totally, you know, changed the graphical situation and made it look kind of like a Lord of the Rings type of ideal here. I mean, I think everyone should at least check out the screenshots here. I mean, you know, talk about being inspired to do things. You know, this is probably took an awful long time, and it's very well done.
Indeed.
I guess the interview with the guy that did it, MRTN, I guess he refers to himself as, you know, they say they have it's entirely in the Tolkien universe with 15 civilizations, 300 new units, 25 great wonders. I mean, very detailed, very impressive. And, you know, I, just looking at the screenshots, I'm impressed. If anyone has Civ 3, perhaps they can play it and tell us how it is.
Yes, please do.
We need to know.
Thank you for creating a Lord of the Rings mod, not a Harry Potter mod. Don't anybody do that. Never. Never.
I'll hurt you, Dan. I swear I will.
Never.
If you have any news for us, any news tips, contact us with new tips.
Head on over to apolton.net/about, look for contact us, or news@apolton.net also works.
And you can also PM.
Yes, you can. Judas, Dan Q, Snoopy369, and Illuminatus, one of us four, we'll get that up there. Welcome to the podcast, where we talk about hot issues in the forums.
Now, the first one is Railroad Connected.
Yeah, this discussion started back in May, continued into June, and then just in the last couple of weeks has started up again, courtesy of Strabo. Perhaps he just found the thread as I did. I missed it the first time.
Maybe he was talking to Comrade Tassadar about thread necromancy.
I guess there was a question first off how you would handle multiple links. So, for example, if City A is connected to City B, then that's one link. Then you connect City B to City C. So is that one more link or a total of three links? Well, I think it's three links. I mean, A to C via B. I mean, B is a stop along the way to or from A or C. So like in real life, for example, a train could bypass a station, if there was even one, in City B and just go to and from A to C directly. So I don't think that's an issue.
True. And also, I mean, speaking of stations, you can also add another building called the station. You know, if there's two railroads being connected there, you know, the station will provide the benefit.
Oh.
See, I should post that. Nah. Maybe I should write in Polycast, listen to our ideas. But, you know, the idea is a solid one. But I think instead of just having, you know, the trains being connected, perhaps, you know, a building like a station would be able to activate that. If you have all the requisite connections made, you have a station, or else otherwise it is assumed that the train just goes by it. Does not stop. So, you know, there's an idea for another building. Not that we don't have enough already, but, you know, I think it could be something that could work, give you incentive to create, a new type of strategy there for, I guess, building railroads.
Yes, as long as it doesn't become, you know, a micromanaging headache. I mean, perhaps couple it under the improving the trade network automation option, which I love, by the way.
Well, you never know. You know, the next expansion might involve trade. So, you know, maybe Firaxis is listening in right now and thinking, well, we better include that in. If that's the case, I want a city named after me. Imrana would sound nice. There you go. That's my price.
Oh, I thought it was going to be quantity over quality, but...
No, no.
No.
No, that's just awkward silence.
Yes, now, if you wanted to name a city after Polycast, awkward silence would be perfect.
Wait, who said name it after a Polycast? Name it after me, me.
But you are nothing without Polycast. Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. I was supposed to say that out loud. Internal thoughts, internal.
I think I have more posts than you anyway, Dan. So take that.
Again, you're just proving my quantity over quality argument. Thank you! And Injun says that I would say that any intercity trade should get +1 commerce if the two cities are connected by rail. Well, you know what? That +1 sounds good to me. Well, the commerce part, I mean, not another +1, although I don't know what I could possibly be referring to. You know, then there was a concern from Zeese that, you know, trade routes would change too much, and then Madjin said, but that's happened a lot over real life history. Perhaps at the easier difficulty levels, there wouldn't be so much of a chance that trade routes would change, but then the likelihood would increase based on a formula as you increased in difficulty. So you could either make this formula static or based on a number of factors, depending upon how that works out in gameplay, because, of course, we can have great suggestions about making Civ more realistic, but in gameplay, in terms of balance, if it's throwing things off, ultimately, if it's not making it fun, then I guess we kind of have to sacrifice real life for gameplay. And if you want real life, go live it. But what would we know?
Life.
What?
Isn't that Civ Meyer's maxim, basically? You know, if real life interferes with fun, go with the fun. That is actually a good lesson to deal with it, if anyone making games, actually. Or anyone making modifications to games. Realism is in these type of games, is something that, you know, is aspired to you to be a little bit more realistic in certain things, but if it interferes with fun, there's no point in having it.
If we could only apply that same lesson to other elements in life.
Like work?
Yeah, exactly. You know, Sid says that...
Who the hell is Sid?
That's for me to know and you to find out, you... Oh, and then I'm fired.
Yes. Dan, you haven't made all your money on Poly?
No, it all goes to the tax man.
Tax man.
Yeah.
It's because you live in Canada. Come to the U.S. and be friends with George Bush. You'd never have to pay taxes again. And now, to satisfy our Quebecois listeners, we will talk in a French accent.
Send all hate mail.
Moi?
Welcome to the Senate. In this section, we talk about game strategy. Universal suffrage versus representation.
I vote to table this motion. No, I'm sorry, what? I would pick universal suffrage if we're talking about universal suffrage versus representation. I mean, it makes a good argument there, but, you know, I do like the alternative of universal suffrage, what it adds.
Yeah, I think universal suffrage's biggest plus is the fact that you can rush by gold instead of whipping now. I mean, that's, if for no other reason, I will almost always switch to that. Like, the plus two happiness in the five largest cities from representation, I suppose if you're playing on a smaller map where you're not going to have maybe more than half a dozen cities, or if you're on a larger map and you're cut off by greater powers, perhaps you might want to stick with representation for that. But, you know, the plus three beakers per specialist, I mean, just continue on with your improvements and your luxuries, and you're not going to miss that at all in the long run as you build your cities up.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the paying for, rush building with gold is definitely, a good thing at the end of the game when you have a ton of gold, supposedly. And, it's much easier than whipping, unless you're into that sort of thing, Dan. If you have all that gold built up, you know, rush building is the best place to use it, in my opinion. I think that is a main benefit of universal suffrage. And, you know, you need something to use that gold for. I mean, and I think that's the intended purpose of universal suffrage, so you can take that gold, buy yourself a big, big army, or whatever else you want to build.
Well, in terms of unit upgrades as well, I also find that to be an advantage when you have lots of gold. I mean, no longer do you have to say, okay, I better take my unit and I have to go back to a city with a barracks in order to upgrade it. As long as I'm within my cultural borders and I've got the money, I can spend it on that as well. So it's good that that's there, because some people might not want to switch to universal suffrage for whatever reason. I don't know. Perhaps you're a warmonger, you know, but neither of us are that.
No, I'm a nice builder.
Same here, but, you know, if you're about to become a warmonger, or you think you're about to go on the defensive, like, get fascism as soon as you can and acquire it so you can switch to police state. I mean, that, to me, since we're talking about civics, why not bring the other ones into the discussion? With the exception of that, I find the civic is an absolute waste, because the benefits are of no benefit to you, and the upkeep is high.
Yeah.
But I think we could all agree that even before you get universal suffrage or representation, get to hereditary rule. I mean, get rid of despotism. Like, the only reason I can think of not to favor a switch to hereditary rule as soon as you can is if you can't afford the period of anarchy. You know, you're in a war and you're going to die. It's like, oh, I should switch to hereditary rule. So when my civilization is destroyed, I can say,
at least I was in anarchy.
That's
They're not taking me alive.
That's right. Our government didn't fail us. We didn't have one. And, I mean, you know, whipping citizens to rush things. I mean, unless you have, you know, one city, or you have a very strategic city, like this city has a resource that you need, like it's your only source of iron, your only source of coal, and you can't get universal. What's
or
that?
If you like it.
If you like that?
You like it.
You like that? Is that good for you? You just wanted me to say that, didn't you?
I did. I admit it. I'm sorry.
I mean, in that situation, I mean, go ahead. Perhaps you don't want universal suffrage center. Perhaps that's a reason, again, to another reason to stick with that despotism. But switch as soon as possible. As Master Dave has said, nothing that saves as many turns with no consequences as rush buying one's building and units with gold. And he also pointed out, you know, I suppose also if you're a smaller empire, you're also likely to have fewer luxury resources. So if you weren't buying my statement, well, like, oh, well, I may only have, you know, a few cities, but whoop-de-doo. Well, you're likely to have fewer luxury resources, either because you don't have as many on your own soil, or you can't get them imported because no one will trade with you, maybe because you have nothing to trade with, you know. And happiness is and happiness is in need, which it probably is. If you don't have a lot of luxury resources and you're not a culture builder in particular, then perhaps you should stick with representation. As isn't that one of the recommendations when you load a game that Firaxis put in there for all you people out there? Don't upgrade either units, but also don't go to the newest civics just because it's new. It's not always better.
Shiny.
Where? Don't do that.
Oh. Okay.
I like you even less now.
If that was possible. second Senate topic. Is the diplomacy victory the toughest way to win? Now, as a builder, you know, I normally say the conquest is, but, I mean, I assume more people are far more aggressive than I am. So, I mean, actually, I'd probably say that, you know, for those that actually do, you know, engage in aggressive warfare, you know who you are, culture is probably the hardest one, just because of all of the kind of, you know, focus you need to have a cultural victory. I mean, you know, if you're not playing for a cultural victory from the beginning, you know, you'll look at the stats and you'll see, you know, how much culture each city has. You'll notice that third one perhaps is far lagging and you're like, wait a second. Uh-oh. You know, you have two cities that have a lot of resources, building a lot of wonders, but, you know, I need three, and the third one is usually lagging behind. I don't know if that's what you noticed, Dan, but...
Yeah, well, you know, one of my mistakes in Civ 3 when culture was introduced is I would look at a lot of the ancient wonders that would boost my culture, but as soon as I saw obsolete with, I went, oh, well, this is going to be obsolete, well, then that's junk, and I wouldn't bother it, and I would wait till later on when I could actually build wonders that would not expire. Except that wasn't a terribly good idea, because I mean, in terms of what's the word I'm looking for? Exponential. I mean, you know, just a small percentage of culture over a long period of time, say 100 years, the percentage isn't going to have to be as large. Mm. Say instead of trying to do that same amount in only 10 years, because you or 10 turns. Link, very good for me. Just because you weren't planning, you weren't thinking. But unless you are constantly under the threat of defeat by arms and are willing to minimize your global conflicts, diplomacy, I find, is probably the easiest path to victory, though time-consuming, though not, as you said, not as time-consuming as culture can be, or, I mean, and spaceship requires so much patience. I don't even think I have that much patience. But if you're into global conflicts, here's my recommendation. Do it early on before one AI civ finds out about another. You're the only one with contact with that civ.
Go
what?
For it.
What? Those ruins? Oh, we were just testing. We were just blowing our own cities up. Yeah, yeah, we like to do that.
Or, of course, as Mike H. points out in that thread where that question was raised, with vassalization, it becomes much easier to do a conquest. So, you know, you don't even have to wipe them out. Just take out a few cities and vassalize them.
Yeah, I understand it can also be used to improve not only your diplomatic chances, but your conquest as well.
Indeed. It's a win-win.
Oh, it's a win-win-win.
Win-win-win.
Hey. And I think with diplomacy, I mean, as Blake puts it, ram religion down everyone's throat. I don't know about you, but in terms of the true path, I agree, the true path to diplomatic victory is getting everyone to vote for you in the United Nations. This domination element that gets recorded as a diplo victory, I mean, you win, but I mean, what are you winning, really? I mean, I don't like it. You can uncheck it, which is great, but if you do leave it on, either because you forget to uncheck it or, you know, you're the only one in a game that, you know, wants it gone, at least the percentages are high enough that I don't think it's as likely to happen as to say perhaps somebody else winning by another victory condition. But I think we all know the formula for ramming religion down one's throat in Civ 4, right? Mm. Convert to a religion. Spread its influence. Oh, curse that three limit missionary.
I'm not saying anything in case the FBI is bugging my computer.
Oh, I see. I like they'd be interested in you. You're nothing. Huh? Oh, no, wait. That was one of those internal thoughts again. I'm sorry. but I understand from gameplay why we've got that three limit. Make peace, sign open border agreements, switch to theocracy, dispatch missionaries to other nations as soon as possible. And in the case of the likes of Isabella, I love this recommendation. I haven't tried it yet, but use your newfound religious influence to engage in a united holy war. Although, since Imran, since you and I are builders, I'm not even sure I could entice someone else to war, because I might say, yes, join this war with me. And, oh, by the way, you do all the doing and I'll do all the saying, you know? perhaps a less violent approach would be to approach your neighbors with your newfound influence and say, hey, stop trading with that woman.
Oh.
I censored myself at the last moment. Are you proud?
Yes, I am. What you say in the privacy of your own house is fine, but on podcast, we're engaged in a family-friendly environment. At least, that's what we tell ourselves.
Some twisted family.
You. Don't get me started.
The people are the heroes, not the healer.
Mailbag. Some of you may have noticed on the forums there was a thread about the Paulton and Sith fanatics were up for deletion on Wikipedia. You know, they have this little thing on Wikipedia where they say an article is up for deletion, and they had a discussion on whether or not it should stay. And I guess it seems that Paulton did enough, added enough information, because it was kind of a little stub of a thing before, that I guess it was allowed to stay. I think we went out on that one, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, and I think to read the quote-unquote original, or at least long-standing, entry for Paulton took about 20 seconds. Well, I hadn't thought so, but when I first saw this up for deletion, I was annoyed, as I think a lot of people were. But in the end, the person who initiated this has the opposite effect, is what happened. So I can't thank him enough. I guess this individual, I forget his handle, and I'm not going to justify his existence by looking it up because I don't care. I guess he has a fetish, to use a word, because again, I like controversy. He has a fetish of putting up articles for deletion. You know what? He probably saw the site's name and went, I wish I thought of it. I must eliminate it. Oh, I can't live with myself. And what's interesting is that even though it was not a vote, and there was a notice in this in a similar thread for Sith Fanatics to be deleted, that this is not a vote. It's just a discussion thread to try to come to some form of consensus or not. There wasn't enough consensus in Sith Fanatics, so it was just kind of, well, we didn't resolve anything, but there was enough to say in the Paulton write-up that it should be kept. There was a clear voice for that, which was wonderful. And thanks to everyone who's helped improve our article, I agree it needed to be improved. But the suggestion that it needed to be deleted, I mean, talk about throwing the baby out with the bathwater. That's not what that article needed. It needed references, and it still needs some references. For example, I believe someone at one point said that Dan Q is great, but, like, that's not listed in there. I mean, come on.
That's not referenced.
That's not referenced. Can you believe that?
Never be referenced.
Can you believe that?
Oh, well, you know, like you said, it was actually a good thing in the end because it actually expanded the entries for both Paulton and CFC, I think, which is still around as well. Basically, before both of them were kind of small and kind of like, hey, this site is great, and you know. I think that by having this semi-crisis, people were willing to write up more and show why both of these should be included in Wikipedia and show, you know, what their history has been, their how important both the sites, Paulton and CFC, have been to Firaxis and, even Activision, who did CTP, you know, and big, huge games. So in the end, you know, I think it was a good thing. And maybe we'll actually have more people come to our sites as a result.
Indeed. And Sith Fanatics' article was a little more extensive than a Paulton's, but even it lacked references, although it did have a couple. There was also, from that, the discussion kind of went from a Paulton and Sith Fanatics specifically. I can't remember if it's in the Paulton entry or the Sith Fanatics entry, but one person said that fan sites should not be listed in a general wiki. If you have a gaming fan site, it should be in a gaming wiki. Well, yes, they should be in both, actually. So maybe that's another plus in that respect. Maybe some gaming wikis out there, of which I know none. but I think general pluses for being included, whether you're talking about a Civ fan site, a gaming fan site, or any fan site. So I guess for Imran, it would be Harry Potter.
Yay!
And for me, for example, would be Star Trek, Babylon 5, Stargate, all of those titles. Woo, sci-fi. Battlestar Galactica as well. The new as well as the old.
No, just the new.
Oh, come on. Like, you don't... I wish the Cylons would say, by your command. I mean, how could you get rid of that classic...
Because it was silly, Dan. Admit it. I know you like the silly, but this is time for realism and grittiness and OT cast.
I was about to say, I don't know if we could put realism and OT in the same sentence, but you did it. Congratulations.
I won a triple award score for it.
Newbie.
Look at both of the communities, how they have basically, you know, helped Firaxis, and how Firaxis especially has taken people from the community that, you know, they found from Palton or Civ or CFC to help them out on their games. I mean, there have been plenty of people who have distinguished themselves based on, you know, maybe mods they've done or whatnot on our forums.
Yes, and either you became a member of the Palton community and you were subsequently hired by Firaxis or Big Huge Games, whether directly or indirectly. I think in some cases there's more of an argument for an indirect, but hey, we'll take what we can get. Or even, for example, in Civilization Chronicles, in the article Soren Johnson wrote on the Civ community, finding out about Firaxis needing programmers through Palton. So with that, and so tie in there to whether we're talking about the developer like Firaxis or Big Huge Games, or even publisher, I mean both Palton and Civ Fanatics from the official Civ 4 website by 2K Games, there are references to threads in each of our forums. I would like to see more fan sites listed on Wikipedia. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good service. I mean, people are generally looking at stuff and want to see, you know, probably they're going around and they click on Civ 4, you know, they want to see what are the fan sites, who are the big time players, and I guess the fan, you know, in terms of fan sites for the games that they're playing, because of course, as we know, generally it's the fan sites and the forums on the fan sites that provide you with the best information on, say, not just how to play the game, but little things in the game that you might not have noticed beforehand.
You will click and click and click, and you add after add after. Oh. Wait.
We've lost Dan. In the last mailbag category, which is an interesting, kind of a whimsical type of discussion about, I guess this has brought this to the attention of us. Ever wonder about the inactive posters / screen names? All these names, interesting screen names, but they never post. As this noted, there's some guy who had a birthday on the 20th of November. His name was Ready to Die. But he only had two posts. So, and of course, other people noted perhaps that, you know, they just post in the OT, and as we know, OT people are second-class citizens, thank you, Dan, that don't receive posts. But I haven't seen that particular poster in the off-topic either. So, who are these folk? Do they just register once? Because as far as I know, there's no requirement that you have to register to read posts at Poly.
That's right.
So, I mean, do they just register to post once or post a couple things and lose interest? Or what exactly are they doing? Is there any benefit that they get with registering, Dan? Or is it just because they want a fun little screen name to reserve in the future in case they do decide to post? And in case they do decide that they do have no lives and need to join us in our no livelihood?
In the past, there have been some people who have not, okay, I'm talking about people that haven't already registered. They went to register and they found out that this username was already taken. And they wanted to know, for example, is there any way that they could have that username? And on very rare occasions, when people have done this, I've looked up the account, and if they hadn't posted, for some time, what I would do is I would send an email to the address on record asking if they still wanted this name, if they're still going to be active. The easiest solution is if the email bounces back because they haven't been keeping it up to date, well then, we've got someone who's here and current and interested, and the person who had that name didn't do their part. I mean, we've always asked, and it's still a standing request, that if your email address changes at any time, that you update your profile for that very reason.
Speaking of which, okay, never
mind. Guilty. but in a couple of cases, people have not responded to it, like the email is just gone, Mm-hmm. And what we have said is, we've actually said the stated policy is sorry, no, the name is taken. Perhaps consider a slight variation on it. Whether, for example, you could substitute a number for a letter, but the thing to do is if you have a specific issue to ask us and we will deal with it on a case-by-case basis because there is no 1 plus 1 equals 2 when it comes to this.
When I originally joined up, I wanted to be Dan Q.
Everyone wanted to be Dan Q. You're not the first and you won't be the last. Sorry. Aww.
My real name is actually Daniel Quack, but unfortunately, Dan Q was already taken. And then I converted to Islam and changed my name to Muhammad Ali. But that was already taken. So here I am.
Again, any hate mail.
I hate myself. Does that count?
You can direct hate towards yourself now.
Yay!
Welcome to the theater. Reading of the Civilization 3 story Myron vs. the Volcano by Jeremy 2.0. The narrator is Makalua, the king, Dan Q, and featuring Imran Siddiqui as Myron.
Myron Cartwright had dreamed for years of visiting all the world's most faraway places, a vision he had to admit never involved being sacrificed to an active volcano.
I don't suppose there's any room for negotiation here.
He asked, swinging beneath a bamboo pole carried by four hefty native men in broadleaf clothing. Their king, distinguishable only by a faded Air Jordan t-shirt, shook his head.
You show up and the volcano erupts. Seems pretty straightforward to me.
Myron stumbled for a response, in no small part to the starting realization that the native king spoke impressive English.
Oh, okay. I admit an unfortunate confluence of events, but surely you can't believe one led to the other.
You're not the one with a house in the path of an act of lava flow. I'll grant you the science is a little shaky, but you can't really blame us for taking the chance, right?
You won't think less of me for blaming the living out of you, I presume.
Don't sweat it.
They drew as close to the top of the volcano as they dared. Smoke billowed from dozens of fissures splitting the surface of the cone. Brilliant streaks of red-hot magma formed lines around them, spitting molten rock into the air. Deep rumble from beneath their feet echoed in their ears. The king put his hands on his hips and looked perplexed.
Too bad we can't get closer to the crater. Shame, really.
King surveyed the area thoughtfully.
I wonder if stuffing you into one of these lava cracks would satisfy our gods.
I know this isn't the time or place, but technically it's still called magma until it reaches the surface.
He shrugged as much as the vines binding into the pole would allow.
Sue me. I was pre-law at Berkeley, not geology.
He gestured at the four men bearing Myron and pointed to a gaping hole spouting smoke and ash.
Wait, you went to college and still believe in volcanic sacrifice?
You got something against adversity? What kind of school did you go to?
But I'm not a virgin. You're supposed to sacrifice a virgin, aren't you? I'll mess things up with you for you and your gods.
Oh, I always thought that virgin thing was overrated. We had to wait around for virgins. This place would have been wiped off the face of the earth years ago.
The four bearers began to swing Myron in unison, hoping to heave him into the fissure without singeing their saris off.
My father's a powerful man. He'll send people to look for me.
The king held up a hand to stop his men and walked closer to Myron.
Your dad's in the army or something?
Not exactly.
Well?
Myron cleared his throat.
He owns a winery in California. He supplies the whole country with some of the finest vintages in the world.
The king thought about this for a few seconds.
Which winery?
Myron told him.
Well, why didn't you say so before?
5 days later, Myron and the king stood near the top of the volcano once more. An even dozen empty wine bottles were scattered across the ground as Myron uncorked another and began pouring it onto the ground.
You know, this may be the weirdest thing I've ever done.
You're just lucky I went to school not too far from Napa. Besides, is this any weirder than cutting down a perfectly good tree and sticking it in your living room every December? We can always go back to Plan A if you prefer.
No thanks. I just hope your gods appreciate a good Pinot Noir.
King stopped pouring long enough to try a small sip from the bottle.
I'm sure they do. I just hope they don't mind if there are a few bottles missing from the case.
Time for the second part of our interview with Soren Johnson. Once again, our apologies for the poor sound quality. This is the best we could make of it. I've been going around the forums when Chronicles was announced, and like I just said, there were some complaints that some games were missing. Could you explain to us why some of these are missing? For example, CivNet?
Sure. CivNet is, for whatever reason, not XP compatible. I find it interesting that, considering the reception of CivNet, that some people are wishing it was in there. But I guess, you know, there's always fans of every product. So,
exactly.
You know, it's something about the way the network code works doesn't jive with.
Yeah, it's not surprising. It's a product from, what was it, 1992 or thereabouts?
Yeah, well, it was a pre-Windows 95 version. I guess it was Windows 3.1, you know, so yeah, who knows.
Yeah, that's fun.
And that was a really weird product because it was actually kind of developed in parallel with Civ 2. It's kind of like MicroProse was very big at the time, and they didn't necessarily had a clear vision of what they wanted to do with Civ, you know. I think there was one team that thought they just needed Civ 1 with multiplayer, and then there was Brian's team, which I guess was kind of more or less just Brian to begin with, who just you wanted to make a real sequel to the game. Yeah, so that's CivNet.
Okay, and Colonization?
Colonization is the official term is that Colonization is not a Civ game. I won't the word from on high.
Yeah, indeed. You can argue about that either way, I guess. Okay, so Multiplay Gold Edition we discussed. And Alpha Centauri?
Oh, well, Alpha Centauri is owned by EA.
Yeah, that's going to be hard. People complain about it frequently, so I guess I have to mention it.
Yeah, I mean, back when we were independent, maybe that would have been a little bit easier, but... big publishers are not exactly rushing to work together with each other.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Especially in the case of EA.
Yeah, along the same times, of course, a call to power.
Well, I hope there aren't too many people complaining about why call to power is not in the Civ Chronicles.
I think it was actually on GameSpot that I saw someone complaining about this. Apparently there are people outside of Poland who play that game.
Yeah,
it was a pretty big shot to begin with, and the big one, the big one that a lot of people have complained about, Warlords.
Yeah, well, I think that was sort of a publishing decision about not wanting the sales of one to affect the sales of the other.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things, basically.
Yeah, my explanation that I've given in the forums is, I mean, you can include Warlords, but that's going to make the game just $40 more expensive, probably.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't see anyone being interested in that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Civ 4 is still selling for 40 or 50 bucks various different places, so...
I think the standard price is around 30 now, at least in my local PC shop.
Yep.
I was actually a little bit surprised by that, but...
Last time I was in Walmart, it was still selling for $40. Or so.
Oh, okay.
You know, obviously, it changes from place to place.
Yeah, exactly. Even in Europe, it's different, of course.
Well, speaking of place to place, who else is going to be able to get Chronicles? Is it just North America, or is it coming out elsewhere?
There are plans to release Chronicles in Europe, but it won't be until next year, and there's no specific release date for that yet.
Okay. Amazon lists it as November 10 for the UK. So.
Okay. Well.
Apparently, but that's the only thing I found in all of Europe, just Amazon UK.
Right, well, that could be, I mean, that's probably, since they're English, that's...
Yeah, I guess it makes it easier.
Why that works out.
Okay, but there are also plans for localized versions, but just much later.
Yeah, later.
Okay, well, that's good news for our German and French and other minorities. Well, that's enough for Chronicles for a moment. The Civ franchise is rapid spending now. Take-Two has bought the rights to it. We've seen, of course, new Civ expansions and Civ City Rome and now Chronicles. What do you think of this development? Do you think we'll see more of this in the future? And do you like this development?
Well, it's. I mean, Civ's a very Civ's a very big franchise, and it's definitely going to grow. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, it's kind of a big question, you know, where we should go about, you know, things like, you know, spin-offs and, you know, other side products, because, you know, when we originally envisioned, you know, doing, you know, Civ 3 and doing Civ 4, you know, all our focus was mainly on, making the core game, more fun and, just giving people a better experience, along that sort of great turn-based, tile-based tradition that Civ has always had. But, there's always other gameplay possibilities out there, and I think the real key is, we're just going to want to make sure that if we use the Civ name for anything, we want to make sure that it's, something that's appropriate and, is a lot of fun and, doesn't induce any, cynicism about how we're using it.
Well, Take-Two also bought up Firaxis a month back. Has it made any changes there at Firaxis, or have they left you guys pretty much alone?
They've left us, pretty much alone. I mean, they bought us because they liked what we're doing, and they've always told us that they want us to keep doing that, basically. And so it's things are definitely a little bit different. A lot of the internal paperwork stuff all has changed now, and there's definitely different ways of doing things. And but it's nice never not having to always worry about what the next pub. We've been through a lot of publishers over the years for many different reasons, and that can always put the company in a very precarious position. Whereas now we can focus a lot more on just making games. But Firaxis will be I don't know if what people would expect from Firaxis should change, because Take-Two really wants us to be making strategy games, the type of games that Firaxis is really known for, and that's what we want to keep making. If they had come to us and said, well, it's time to see time for a Sid Meier's first person shooter, then that might be a little a little iffy. Of course, if that's what Sid says, then that's a much different story. I mean, he can, his first 10 years, he was famous for flight simulators, not strategy games. So you never know what he might go for. But for the most part, they want us to do what has made us popular. So
okay, I did hear some stories that very rapidly now. Any truth to that? A lot more people walking around the hallways?
You cut out there for a second. Did you say, are we growing rapidly?
Yeah, you're growing. There's more people being hired, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right. Firaxis is growing very rapidly. I think we're close to 70 now, maybe. And to give a perspective, when I joined the company in 2000, I think we were around 20 or 25. So, yeah, things have definitely changed. The Civ 4 team is probably... as big as we've ever been. The Railroads team was nice and big. There's another project that's going on that we haven't announced yet that the team will probably be the biggest team that we've ever had. And, that's part of that's game development. Part of that is also us being established as a company so that we can work on multiple projects at the same time. And also the fact that we have a publisher now. When you're independent and you're hiring people, you know that the more people you hire, the more pressure that's on your company, because it increases your burn rate, and it means that you need to make sure you always have two or three contracts lined up. So we have a little more financial comfort now, so we can grow to a multi project studio without worrying about that too much.
Oh, that's good news for everyone, I think. So, what's next for you? Are you working on the next Civ 4 expansion pack, or doing something new?
So, what I'm going to be working on next, I'm not. My primary project right now is not a Civ title. It's a new project. It's new IP. It's a really exciting game. We've actually had it running internally here for quite a while, and it has a big, I guess you'd say, internal fan base inside the company. People are always asking to play the game. Very popular. It's a really great, great multiplayer game. But, it's going to be quite a while till you hear anything official about it. I probably really shouldn't be talking too much about it. I mean, it's a strategy game. It's going to make people happy. It's got a real multiplayer focus. It's kind of inspired by it's inspired particularly by one title that's very old, but has always been acknowledged as a really great multiplayer game. And I can't wait to get it out to the world.
Ooh.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear more about it. I guess we'll have to wait a little bit longer.
Oh, yep, waiting. So you weren't in there with Warlords directly yourself, so if you had a chance to play it, how do you think it worked out?
Warlords worked out pretty well. The part of the main thrust of, not the main thrust, one of the many main thrusts of Civ 4, it was to make the game very moddable, very open, very flexible. And that was done for a lot of reasons. I mean, certainly the community was one thing we had in mind, and it's been really neat to see a lot of the mod packs become available on the web. There have been many that are very, very popular, and you see talked about on non-Civ sites because people are enjoying them so much, mm-hmm. which is great. You know, we talk about how, you know, people think of mods, they're usually really always thinking of shooters. You know, and really, we really like to establish Civ 4 as like strategy mod engine. And, it seems like we've had some success there. But the other reason we did that was so that it would be easy for us to, develop all sorts of cool, interesting, different scenarios, for Civ 4. I think, Warlords did a really good job of that. The Genghis Khan scenario that I talked about earlier, you know, has some interesting twists. The Chinese unification one is pretty cool in that, you know, it makes good use of the vassal states and has this, all this sort of diplomatic stuff going back and forth. And it's just neat to see all the ways that, you know, you can twist the game around, whether, you know, you get to play the barbarians or, you know, in the Alexander scenario, that the tech tree is built up of promotions instead of actual techs, you know, I mean. Yeah, these are all kind of, you know, cool twists on Civ 4 that actually are fairly easy to make, but make the game, you know, play significantly different. And for the core game itself, you know, we wanted to make some significant additions, but, you know, we didn't want to push the game so far it didn't feel like Civ anymore. So, you know, we thought the great general unit would be, you know, a good obvious place to go. You know, that you know, have a great person that's involved with the military. Unique buildings seemed like an obvious good thing that, you know, people would like a lot. And you know, there's always, some interesting wonders and civilizations you can add. So, you know, I think it's a pretty good product, and people seem to be enjoying it. And the main thing we didn't want to see is, you know, Warlords broke Civ 4, you know. Yeah. And that definitely hasn't happened. You know, it's Civ can be an intimidating franchise to develop within. And so you have to kind of walk the right balance between taking a risk while also, you know, making sure that, you know, you're not going to destroy the things that people have been enjoying for a long time.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And with Civ City Rome, have you given that game a chance?
Actually, I haven't been very involved with Civ City Rome. There's some other people in the company here who have been much more tied in the developer when that product was going over. I saw it in practice a few times, and it seems to be a neat little game. But city builders are not my area of expertise, mm-hmm. so I can't talk too much about that product.
You haven't played it either?
I just messed around with it a little bit. Haven't really delved into it too deeply.
Oh, okay.
So what else besides Civ 4 in the card game have you been playing lately?
I played a lot of DEF CON. That's a really fun neat mm-hmm. little game. That's a game about nuclear annihilation, basically. It's the obvious, like, touchdown that everyone refers to is, you know, the War Games movie from the 80s. And it's basically that, you know. I mean, it's really inspiring from one perspective, and that game has no art. I mean, none. Which is just incredible, you know, coming from a project where, you know, we had 20 artists working on the game for you know, over a year. And, I mean, obviously there are little icons moving around, but, you know, like, wow, they could make such a fun little game, you know, without having art slow them down. You know, it's just such a neat little product. They get a lot done with sound effects and music. You know, in many ways you see how sound can be a lot more evocative than visuals, because sound, I think, plays on the imagination a lot more than visuals do. You know, because visuals are always have to be very concrete, which is why a lot of games now are starting to mess around with stylized graphics. But audio, I think, always is much more suggestive. They do a good job of doing that in DEF CON. It's a fun game. It's got a lot of sort of, you know, short-term, long-term dynamics. You know, is it should you attack now or should you wait later? The one downside is that it's got kind of a really funky control scheme. I'm always right-clicking when I should be left-clicking and left-clicking when I should be right-clicking. I'm not sure if they picked the exact best way to do that. I'm also playing Company of Heroes. I think that's the name of the game. I keep forgetting if that's Band of Brothers, Brother in Arms, or first. Like, would it kill them to come up with just a new name for World War II games? I mean, it's insane. But I think the name of the game is Company of Heroes. It's an RTS. It looks great. It plays really nice. I mean, it has that just great tactical feel. I mean, I've seen games before that have tried that with World War II. I think, like, the close combat games had that. But I never actually played those. They always look too fussy to me. But this game does a great job of using RTS conventions that people already know to make it work inside of this World War II scenario where, you know, you pay a lot of attention to your specific squads, move them forward, get your artillery in the right direction. I haven't really ventured too much into the full on. I've just been playing through the campaign right now. I haven't ventured too much into the skirmish mode, either single or multiplayer. I'm sure they're a lot of fun, but I have to say that I think I might be a little let down once I play it as sort of like a traditional RTS. I mean, the RTS genre's conventions are really codified at this point. I mean, it's just weird. I don't understand why a World War RTS game, why you'd be able to build units in a World War II RTS game. You know, it still seems weird to me, you know. Like, it seems like if Sid was talking about this recently, about how, you know, he thinks that if you had a World War RTS game where you had a finite number of units, and maybe at a certain point you get reinforcements, you know, on a certain schedule, you know, you'd pay a lot more attention to, you know, you'd be a lot more worried about making sure your troops are safe. It's hard, though, because it's just, you know, RTS is a proven genre. You know you're not going to be, if you go down that path, you know your game is going to do pretty well. You know, if you have good graphics and good gameplay and you execute a lot of things and it follows the standard conventions of an RTS game, you know, bases and building units and resources and left-click, select, right-click, move, and, you know, if you follow all those, you know, real standard conventions, you know you'll do pretty well. But geez, you know, there's so many games out there just like that. And Company of Heroes has raised the bar so high for that genre. It's got to be pretty intimidating if you want to make a new RTS game nowadays. You know, and it's really worth pointing out that RTS should mean all sorts of things. You know, SimCity is an RTS game. Roller Coaster Tycoon is an RTS game. Railroads is an RTS game. But, you know, people really aren't exploring the RTS space as much as they should be.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, final question. This interview was part of our podcast. Were you familiar with the concept of podcasts and you listened to any yourself? Any recommendations?
I've, you know, listened to podcasts from time to time, you know, if I'm looking, you know, want some good background listening. I listen to some of the gaming site podcasts every once in a while. Next Generation has a really good podcast.
Yeah, I listened to that one myself. That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one. I mean, the other gaming sites, you know, the regular, you know what they all are. You know, they're all okay. You know, nothing that's really made me, you know, a real regular customer.
Okay.
We've got a podcast. So I hope people are listening to those.
You don't say.
Yeah. Really?
Everyone's got a podcast. Yeah.
Yep. Seems to be pretty popular these days.
And, so it's good that it's moving along.
Okay. I think that concludes the interview. Thank you for your time.
Well, thanks for giving me a chance to talk. It's been fun. You know, Paulson's great. And, you know, I'm glad you guys are doing this.
That's a quote we got to keep. We got a little, what do you call it? What they have on the radio. He shots a little bleeps.
Oh, Paulson
was great.
Yeah, whatever they're called. Welcome to a pod.
Something like that. Okay, well, I think that that's a wrap. If you have any questions for us, you can send them to, what was it, Dan?
Polycast@apolton.net. That's polycast@apolton.net.
And if you really want to humor us, send us a voicemail, and we will play it on the air.
Reach us through our Skype account, the Polycast, by using Skype yourself. The call is free. Download Skype from Skype.com, SKYPE.com. You can also phone us if you prefer. In North America, call 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, call 44-20-7871-7659. That's 44-20-7871-POLY. No profanity or hate mail, please. Well, thank you once again for tuning in to Polycast, the official podcast of a Bolton Civilization site at bolton.net. I've just been joined by
Imran Siddiqui. Before we go, perhaps to drive up listenership, let's mention the people that have posted in our Polycast forum. Thank you, Solver and Jancha, for acknowledging that we do have a Polycast.
Yes, Polycast, not just another empty forum. Not that we have those.
But I'm moderator, which is nice. I like that.
Thank you once again, Comrade Tassadar. Imran... Who's this person? Oh, no, wait.
Oh, I didn't post in that forum. What are you talking about?
Thank you, Dale. I think he wants to be back on the show.
Thanks, Dale. he sounds more interesting than me, at any rate. Not that that's hard, but, you know...
thank you, EPW. Dropikoff.
Yes, sir. Wasn't he the first listener to our Polycast, I believe?
The first admitted listener.
Admitted.
There are others that listen, but they're too ashamed.
Oh, I'm ashamed. Oh, wait a second. Who is the one that voted us 1 out of 10? At least have the balls to admit that you did it. Show us your face. Tell us what you hated about it. Don't just vote one and leave. How cowardly of you, sir. How cowardly.
Or ma'am.
Oh, yes. Or ma'am. It was Mackie then, wasn't it?
And as we said, we know where Walter is, and we think we know where Mackie is. Hopefully they'll be able to join us next time. Maybe they're on the press tour for Polycast. That's what's going on.
Ooh,
they're on the press tour.
Why didn't I get to walk the red carpet?
I don't know how they managed to wangle that, because, I mean, here we are doing all the work for what they're promoting now. And
I know.
Oh, man.
I'm telling you. Maybe Mackie's off with her admirers, wondering about her sexy voice. Don't I have a sexy voice? Don't I?
moving on. Record date November 25th, 2006. Edited by Daniel Thank You Quick. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV and the Warlords Expansion Pack. Copyright 2006, Bolton Civilization site at bolton.net.